Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 5, Episode number 12 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, and here with me in the Cinematica studio we have today...
Kaylee.
Hey, Kaylee.
Hey, yeah, it's just the two of us recording late night sessions, Cinematica.
I know, it's weird and cozy at the same time, and although I know from my arrival today that the picture theatre is as busy as it has ever been, I had mm-hmm. to park a long way away to get mm-hmm. here today, so that's a good sign on a sunny day when there's cricket at the stadium, there's still people coming to the movies. It's really good to see.
Mm.
All right, in today's episode... Not very much, actually, because this is a weird week. It's like the calm before the storm week, or the calm between storms, because, you know, we had the Christmas Day rush, we had the New Year's Day rush, and we've got the rush of prospective Academy Award nominees and Golden Globe winners starting this Thursday. But here, in this little particular week, only two films got released. And we're going to talk about them anyway.
Because what are we going to do on a Wednesday night?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, those of you that tune in to Cinematica because you want to hear about quality, you could probably skip this one.
Yes. Unless you just like to hear the beautiful tones of our voice.
There is that too.
Yeah.
This will probably be a relatively brief sort of show. So... all that, as the saying goes, and more in this week's episode of New Zealand's Favourite Movie Podcast. But first, Kaylee, what is in the mailbag?
Well, we're still getting lots of tweets about the sort of holiday rush films. We'll just jump
Somebody
right
stole
into
our
it.
Two-word review. Shtick.
I'm going to say they've co-opted it. Because have you been to their website?
No.
It's actually a university-based radio station. Two males, one female. They do film reviews. Using hashtag two-word reviews, and I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Because, of course, on Twitter, I have the two-word review search, the stream saved, and they came up. And I was like, what? But I think it's great.
Imitation is the best form of flattery.
I know. And so now, you know, we have...
Are their two-word reviews better than mine?
I don't know.
Not difficult.
No two-word reviews directed at them have come up yet.
Ah, so no one's actually answering their call.
No, but keep persevering.
Yeah.
Other... podcast with two males and one female. You can do it. So RJ, also known as RJ_movies, two-word review, Wolf of Wall Street, Leonardo da Cantalabra. Sounds great. Sounds great. Two-word review for 2014, the first one for the Mirka is Enough Said, Heartbreaker.
Oh. Mm. Yeah, and nice to know that the Merc is catching up on all the pre-Christmas stuff because, you know, we always like to hear his thoughts.
Mm. And Claire.comedy, which we've recently been introduced to on Twitter and found out is also from Vancouver or lives in Vancouver. Yay, my favorite film podcast, Cinematica Cast, back from holidays. Reviews and movie business info direct from beautiful New Zealand. I may not be reading this right. I'm a bit ill, if you can't tell.
Kaylee's got ear trouble at the moment.
Yeah, and I went to the ER last night and waited for 3 hours and still didn't see anyone, so I decided to go home. So I still haven't seen a doctor. There's some sort of infection raging close to my brain.
Okay.
So
I need you to use Whiteout or Twink or whatever it is to just write your name on those headphones just in case anyone's tempted to. Just purely for sanitation.
Spray them down with like Raid or something afterwards. Oh, dear.
Any updates from Fred Thompson?
Not this week. I tell a lie. Oh my goodness. Two-word review for The Book Thief. Heartwarming. My theater needed a good clean. Kept getting dust in my eye. Cough. Who is this mystery man?
Mm. All right. Well, look, thanks very much for all of your feedback. And when we get to the news, there will be a news item that a great many of you tipped us off about. Mm-hmm. So thank you all for those tips. Keep them coming. Mm-hmm. Now, what have people been watching? This was could have been a fairly dire weekend at the movies, but it'd be interesting to know how many of the new releases have made it into the top five.
Okay, well, at number five, down from three, Fall from Grace, Philomena. Which did you... We're going to talk about the Golden Globes later, but the real Philomena helped come out on stage and had a little moment with Steve Coogan.
She had a moment.
Yeah.
Well, look, I think, you know, movie tickets still need to be sold, don't they?
Has it been
books,
released in the States
still
yet?
Need to be sold.
I think it's still yet to come out.
Oh, maybe that's it. Maybe we're a bit ahead of the game.
In at number four, 47 Ronin, which is one of the... movies.
You'd have to say that that was playing at Cinema One at Reading's in the Titan XC.
And is that where you saw it?
Yes. Oh. And that leads one to believe that it you know, you'd normally put your biggest movie in the biggest theater. Right?
It's just the loudest action film.
Yeah, but there it is. It's only number four.
Oh, people. In at number three, down from one. Finally taken out of the number one position, The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. In at number two, The Book Thief. And in the number one's position, up from two, is Frozen.
Oh, that is a turn up, isn't it? That's an upset. That's a boil over. As they say on the rugby league field, that's a boil over. Well, Frozen, how many weeks has it been before it made it to number one?
3 weeks in release.
Wow. So, Oh, that's okay. That's very, very interesting. School holidays, of course, still going, and not every kid's at camp this week. So, yeah, that's we never actually talked about Frozen, did we, on the show? Did we get to do a review of it? Because I don't think have you seen it?
Mm-mm.
Well, we won't bother then.
I've heard it's good.
Yeah, it's good. It's all right.
It's all right.
I thought the music was terrible. The songs were really, really dire. And, you know, you can tell that it's been set up by Disney to become a Broadway show. Like, it just seems as if it's already structured that way. But the songs just aren't good enough, unfortunately. But the story is quite a good one. And maybe if you're, you know, 8 years old, you'll get a bit of a kick out of it. But who knows? Time to get into some reviews here before we go too much further. Why don't we start with 47 Ronin.
I'm looking for someone who was sold to you when he was a child. Those who enslaved him and killed our leader and banished us from our land. Join us. We will have our revenge.
Mountains of corpses will not stand in our way.
Their army is infinite. We are 47.
Keanu Reeves in feudal Japan, as you would expect, in 47 Ronin. Now, this is a film that already has a reputation as the biggest flop of 2014. This is the John Carter of this year. And, you know, this is a film that its reputation as a disaster area started almost over a year ago. Like, there's been reshoots and recut, like a release date that just keeps moving and moving and moving. And here it is. It's finally made it into cinemas. And, you know, it's got a decent marketing push behind it. It's got, you know, the backs of buses and all those sorts of things going on. Kaylee, did you get a chance to see it?
No, sadly,
You were at ER last night, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, so it's just me. But feel free to ask me questions to fill in gaps about this. So what we've got is 47 Ronin is actually based on a classic Japanese tale of mythology, which is apparently based on fact, where if you understand a little bit about feudal Japan, you'll know that before Japan was a nation state, it was just a patchwork of different regions governed by lords, and there was one sort of overarching leader of the whole thing who everybody sort of fell in behind and who could give orders, but basically each individual lord ran their own sort of area. Okay, the armies sort of slash, what would you call them? Secret Service protecting
Samurai Secret Service.
Yeah, the Samurai.
The Triple S.
are the Samurai, right? And the Samurai, they serve their Lord, and then when if their Lord dies, then they become Ronin, which is Samurai without a master. They don't get to go and be. They don't get to apply for other jobs, basically, right? You can't.
They become a rogue Samurai.
Yeah,
in a way,
a rogue, not rogue in the sense. A very sad Samurai. They become a very sad Samurai because they can't stay where they were. They've got no home. They can't go. They just end up sort of walking the lonely roads of Japan, doing odd jobs for people periodically.
But samurais are so badass. It seems like such a tragic way to go.
Exactly, which is why they would much rather be in a situation where they could take their own lives and die with their masters, you see. So it's actually it's the worst thing that could happen to a samurai is to basically, it's the biggest humiliation to become a ronin, to have no master and no function in society and not be able to use the skills that they've got, right? So, and you know, Japan, it's all about honor and et cetera, et cetera, right? So at the beginning of the film, we're introduced to a, what they call a half-breed, who is kind of mysterious, orphan who is discovered cowering in a ditch somewhere. He is taken in by
this Keanu Reeves?
Yeah.
I feel like that's how Hollywood found him. Like, yeah. Cowering in a ditch. It's like, come be in Bill and Ted.
So anyway, he's not Keanu Reeves at this point. He is, because Keanu Reeves, unmarked by time as he is, even he doesn't, even he can't play 15 anymore, right? So, but a young actor pretending to be Keanu Reeves gets taken in by the local lord, and because he is not high born and he's not a samurai, he's basically treated as a sort of semi outcast. He gets to live in the shed furthest away from the palace, but he nevertheless falls in love with the daughter of the Lord, who also falls for him. But of course, they can never be together because he is not high born enough and he's not a samurai. But the place he came from evidently taught him to be a kind of a badass in his own right. And so he finds himself saving the local samurai when a mysterious, hairy, multi-eyed dragon creature constructed out of the finest CGI
in all
is,
the land
is threatening the village and the neighborhood. Anyway, so the samurai and the lord, they go off to fight this dragon creature, which is the big set piece to kick this film off. Keanu Reeves kills the beast but takes no credit for it because he's not a samurai and therefore can't. Right, so we're all supposed to feel very sorry for him, and then what happens is that a plot is hatched against his lord by the neighboring lord and the neighboring clan, and bad stuff happens. The lord is forced to commit seppuku.
I feel like you're just giving all of this.
No, this is just the setup. This is just the setup, right? Seriously, this is Act One. I'm not going any further than Act One. Trust me, right?
He's
forced to commit seppuku, and all of the 47 samurai who were 46 actually were looking after him, working at his side. They are sent off to become ronin, and and are ordered by the shogun not to take any revenge. Right, so they go off into the woods.
It's just awkward, isn't it? Yeah. It's like, oh well.
I know, but the shogun's word is law, right? So anyway, so they go off into the woods, feel sorry for themselves. Meanwhile, Keanu Reeves is sold off into slavery.
Is there a montage of sad looking ronins just sitting in the forest, like Twilight or something?
A little bit like that. But I did fall asleep through some of it, so there may have been more.
You may
of that.
Have missed the sad montage.
Yeah. Anyway, with the help of the chief samurai, they decide that they're going to get together, ignore the will of the shogun, and restore order and balance to under heaven. You know, justice for their slain lord, and take whatever chances that means in terms of retribution from the shogun once it is all done. And then there's a lot of fighting, right? So. I have told you rather a lot about this in lieu of getting to the point, which is that this is one of the dumbest films I've ever seen. And partly...
Well, I think we need to go back through like every episode of Cinematica and go like, this is the dumbest film I've ever seen in my life. And how many times you've said that and then make a film festival out of it.
A little montage of me saying, this is the dumbest film ever.
Yeah, we have the montage and then the actual film festival.
Right. So, yeah, we could do...
Dan Slevin's dumbest movies.
If only there was a way of monetizing that. So here's my main problem is that this could be, and actually I think this has been told like 17 times in films in Japan, right? So this story is already well known in Japan, and this attempt to kind of juice it up with supernatural giant hairy dragon CGI creatures and witchcraft and all of those sorts of things and turn it into a sort of Japanese Tolkien thing, that this is going to become some kind of this is a tale that's going to be told on such a scale that the kids of the world will go, oh, get me some of that. So, but it doesn't work, partly because the story itself is too slender. It's not an epic. You know, this is really just the tale of bad things that happen, revenge is taken. So it's, you know, and it works kind of well on that, but that's because the story's been told so well. It doesn't need all of that stuff added to it. Another problem is that there are a lot of great Japanese actors in it. Apart from Keanu Reeves, it's all Japanese actors, and a lot of them you'll know from Japanese movies, but they're all speaking in English. And therefore, it's a really heavily accented English film, and it's quite hard to follow. And it just feels stilted. Like, it's not a way for most actors to give their best performances, is to work in either a language they don't know, so they're working phonetically, or they just don't have the same kind of confidence. Keanu doesn't speak much at all, but he's got an American accent, so that's fine. So, you know, it's very hard to sort of get into it and believe in it. There's no characters to sort of buy into and root for. So it's hard to care about what's going on. It's not an uninteresting film, but I've always felt like this whole idea about Japanese culture and honor and seppuku and ritual suicide and all that sort of stuff, it seems to me a kind of, I have an anthropological interest in it rather than a real sort of, I don't give a shit, frankly. That's the problem. It's like, oh, that's interesting, but I don't really understand why. It seems like the most inefficient way to run a country, to every time there's some kind of battle, all of the best fighters on the losing side have to commit suicide. It's like, why don't you just like find them jobs to do? Come work for me, you know? It just seems like a really inefficient way to run a country, frankly. But, it was theirs and they own it, and that's great. But it doesn't work for me. So there's a whole lot of problems there. And I have to say that my companion, who will be listening to this a little bit later on, so I hope that I present her opinions accurately, did not have as many problems with it as I had, and actually thought that it was quite an enjoyable night, and enjoyed it more than she enjoyed The Hobbit, to be honest, because it's an hour shorter, and and generally she actually liked less of the supernatural dragon-y stuff. That, I mean, The Hobbit's full of it, right? But this just had a little bit, so it wasn't so bad. So, yeah. Oh, sorry.
That's the gong.
Yeah. It's like, get off the stage! The hook is coming out, yeah. So to tell me, shut up.
They're playing you out.
Yeah. So that would be it. I suppose, I don't know, got any questions at this point?
No. I'd like to know when it comes out on DVD.
I don't know the answer to your question to that. I suppose you're going to want two words, aren't you, now?
Yeah.
My two words will be Keanu speaks. 47 Ronin. The most amazing thing is that it costs so much damn money, you know, because he doesn't really look like it's all on screen, you know. But then John Carter was the same. $200 million, where is it? It's the action isn't action-y enough. Like, we've seen a lot of, you know, there's 50, 60 years of great Japanese samurai movies that are kind of legendary, and they set an action standard for so many films. And this one is actually isn't as good as any of those. And it's certainly, I didn't think that there was any action in it that was as good as the barrel chase in Desolation of Smaug or any of that stuff. They just seemed like by the numbers, really. So yeah, really, I would say it was disappointing if I'd had any anticipatory feelings for it. So right. There you go. Time for the news.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a, well, I wouldn't say slow news week, but awards season has kicked off, so we'll get into that a little bit later, maybe after our second review.
Sure.
So let's, we have a couple news pieces today. So every January, for the past 16 years, people who care about women's progress behind the scenes in the film industry have restlessly anticipated Dr. Martha Lauzon's celluloid ceiling analysis of the top 250 domestic films during the previous year. The figures for women, according to Dr. Lauzon, have not improved in the 16 years since she's published the story. No surprise there. In fact, things have gotten slightly worse. Here's what she has to say. The film industry is in a state of what might be called gender inertia. There's no evidence to suggest that women's employment in key roles has improved over the last 16 years. I think Manola Dargis got it right when she told Variety recently, Hollywood is failing women, and until the industry starts making serious changes, nothing is going to change.
And you know what? That every time somebody talks about this, they're going to go, yeah, but August Osage County...
But this is about women employed in the
True.
In the back, yes.
And right, yeah. So. But even so. So and actually, how many women directors are there? You know, still not many. More, you know, because I sort of keep a vague track on it as I go through the year, and I go, all right, it's definitely, you know, it's gone from one or two a year to sort of five or six. But out of the 400 that I watch, still not nearly good enough, is it?
And you know, it's scary. Like the film industry, I only worked in a very small sector in Canada, but the film industry is very scary and full of a lot of very intimidating men and some actually very intimidating women. So it's a, definitely a personality thing as well. You got to be real tough to
kick down those doors. Experience a lot of rejection, you know, but just because it's really, really hard, really hard to do.
And 2013 marked the first time in post-Soviet history that a Russian film was number one at the box office, was the number one box office champion of the year at home in Russia. The 3D World War II epic Stalingrad, whose poster art was on this website, which we'll link to, it's very pretty, took in $50.8 million to Iron Man 3's $42.2 million.
And there's a response to this from the Russian cultural commissars. I can't really call them that anymore, can you? That they're wanting to institute some kind of quota system so that there will be more Russian films in cinemas, which is going to improve the box office response to those films and just generally, you know, protect Russian culture because, you know, we're all at risk of being swamped by Hollywood. It's not getting any better, except, you know, we sort of claim a billion dollars worth of Hobbit as being ours when really it's Warner Brothers, isn't it? So, but it's interesting, you know, if anybody in New Zealand would try the same thing. Imagine if you said 20% of all sessions had to be New Zealand films.
Mm.
How quickly would cinemas go bust in this country?
Mm. True. So, yeah, they think that the 20% of screen time should be set aside and that the culture minister, Vladimir Medinsky, spoke fondly of the Soviet era when only 6 American films were allowed in a year. Those were the days.
Yeah, can you imagine if you were at the Soviet Ministry of Culture and your job was to decide which 6 American films were allowed in, you'd have to watch all of them, wouldn't you, to decide. You'd get the best job in Russia.
Mm.
What are you doing? Oh, I'm watching Iron Man 3. Just to see if it's all right for you, for the rest of you.
But imagine if it was one person's opinion.
That was still best job ever.
Still, well, for that person. Yeah. For other people, it's like, oh, yeah, it should have been this. Anyway.
They'll be sneaking video cassettes in with their blue jeans.
Oh, and in sad news today, we got a lot of tweets about this. Use of mobile phone in a cinema screening in the States led to a fatal shooting of one person passing away and the other person being injured. Dan.
Look, I have saw this story, and lots of people sort of used my name when they referred to this as if they think that somehow I am sympathetic to
the shooter.
I have to say, much respect for actually pulling the gun out before the film had even started. Like, you know, even I think that the trailers, it's kind of okay. But no. This was well before the lights had even gone down. Mm. And so, you know, you got to assume that there's something else going on. Mm.
They were, I believe it was a retired police officer.
And somebody who should know better. But, you know, this is, I think it says a lot more about America and guns than it does about, you know, this is like, we've all been angry. I kicked the back of somebody's chair last night for texting during the movie, not just texting, but just like staring at it, just like
a moth. It's like,
yeah. So, you know, it happens, and you know, I've never even held a live firearm, so I've got no idea whether I would consider drawing one in a picture theater. But you know, it's like if you give an angry person a gun, you know, chances are one day it's going to get used, right? So no, bad scene all around.
Very sad indeed. Yeah. So the whole cinema had to be evacuated.
No shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, we'll just carry on. We'll just carry him out.
Yeah, people didn't know what was going on. And it's like, and they kept thinking back to the shooting.
Oh, well, yeah.
The other one.
That's right. Well, I went to that Aurora cinema.
You made the pilgrimage.
I made a pilgrimage there, and it was a very moving occasion to look at the kind of shrine that had been left outside there, and the tape around the place. You know, it was all being closed off, and just to think that so many people who'd just gone out to watch a movie didn't come home. It's a bad scene all around.
Mm. Right. Use safety, people.
Yeah.
Wear a bulletproof vest.
And don't take your phone out. Just like this wouldn't happen if you just, you know, behaved sensibly and, you know, didn't antagonize people.
Mm. Yeah. Watch out. We're going to kick the back of your seat.
So, but the biggest of the big news would have been Golden Globes. Now, last year, we basically made a rule on the show that we wouldn't talk about the Golden Globes because, you know, it's decided by 95 people.
Mm. Foreign right? press.
The Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Whatever that means.
95
what does that
people
mean?
Who are desperate to suck up to stars, and they throw a great party, but no one should look at the Golden Globes as being an arbiter of anything, right? Let alone quality. But
I did agree with some of the awards.
Well, this is the thing: is that I don't know how you can, because until you've seen all the films, like
mostly in television. I was actually more interested in the television side.
Yeah, which we don't talk.
But
about.
We don't talk about that.
But I would say that I've decided that we should just go back on that particular pledge, simply because there's nothing else to talk about this week. So we should talk about the Golden Globes, and I didn't watch it. So Kaylee, can you give us your first-hand report from watching it while you were supposed to be working yesterday?
Yes, thank you. It was an entertaining show, of course, once again hosted by the two best hostesses in all of Hollywood at the moment.
Tina Fey,
yes. And, oh, God.
Scratch your arms.
So sorry, there's something flying on me. Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. Okay.
Yep.
So where do we even start? There's lots of awards given out. Best Motion Picture for Drama went to 12 Years a Slave, which we will be seeing in New Zealand soon. I'm trying to see it. I can't see it.
Oh, my God. Somebody's rewritten the blackboard, haven't they?
I want to say it's coming in February. I think it might be Feb.
It is 12
years.
Oh,
there it is.
Yeah, 6.
Okay, right. Beginning of February. Excellent.
But, you know, you've been to the movies, and it seems to me that there are only trailers for four films that are playing. Everything I go to see, it's the same trailers.
Yeah.
And actually, it's not even – it's Saving Mr. Banks.
Mm-hmm.
Not even 12 Years a Slave, really. American Hustle, maybe. Mandela.
Mm.
And now, thankfully, we don't get to see the Book Thief trailer anymore because it's opened. But, yeah, there's a lot of films that I'm not seeing trailers for. I haven't seen a trailer for All Is Lost. I haven't seen one for Dallas Buyers Club. I haven't seen one for Her, not at the cinema. It seems like there's a whole lot of really good movies that are going unpromoted at the moment.
It is. Of course, no surprise, Alfonso Cuarón?
Closer.
Alfonso, Gravity, best director.
Excellent. That's what we're going to call him from now on, Alfonso Gravity.
Alfonso Gravity. American Hustle picked up a few awards for acting and things like that.
Oh, and it won Best Comedy or Musical, I think. And Amy Adams for American Hustle, which apparently was a very well-regarded award, actually.
Yes. And, of course, who can forget Jennifer Lawrence, because she always makes a scene at awards, and she's really entertaining. I mean, it's great just watching her, just making fun of people on the red carpet. And she got a supporting for American Hustle as well, which is good. What else?
Does this, in your opinion, signal anything for the Academy Award nominations, which are announced, what, on Friday? Or is it even sooner? God, we should know this.
Friday. It's Thursday US time.
Thursday morning. Don't they announce it like super early in the morning so that they can get the East Coast
news cycle? Yeah, so maybe we get it tomorrow morning.
Right.
So organized. So professional. I don't think so.
Like, you've been sick and I've been busy. That's my excuse.
It's hot and I'm sweating. And
you're being attacked by killer bugs.
I am. And
hating bugs.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Golden Globes are a bit funny because it's movies and television together, and it's just celebrities getting together. It's like sort of the first big televised awards event of the year, and it's just sort of the warm-up for the stylists, I think, coming off of holiday.
Yeah. Did Woody Allen turn up to receive his sort of lifetime thing?
No, he didn't, and that has caused a lot of stir online as well, because he doesn't go to award shows straight up for anything.
No, because it's Monday night and he plays jazz on Monday nights. That he's got a regular gig playing jazz in this club in New York, and you can always find him there. That's his thing, and of course it's always a Monday night, so boom, done.
Yeah, and also a lot of people angry that he would get a Lifetime Achievement Award based on all of his involvements and personal things going on. So
Oh God, it's terrible. I mean, sometimes you just have to look at the movies, don't you? Sometimes you just have to say, you know what,
bad people make good work sometimes.
Yeah, and also...
And good people make bad work.
And also, you know, who are we really to say whether he's a bad person or not based on, you know, like, relationships go sour and people say things, you know? Like, I don't know. I wasn't there. When you're convicted of something, maybe that's, you know, that's one thing. Slightly dodgy, some of the choices in terms of relationships after Mia Farrow, maybe. Could argue that, but still, you know, all in all, you know, where does it end? That sort of thing.
I don't know. But I loved the dresses. They looked amazing.
Were they? I was going to ask about that.
There were some beautiful dresses. Everyone's making fun of Jennifer Lawrence because it looked like she was in a sheet with two belts, and I thought that dress was absolutely beautiful, and my roommate agreed with me. So everyone can shut up because Jennifer Lawrence is a goddess.
And any really, really embarrassing clothing faux pas? Were there anybody who just looked like they sort of got dressed drunk?
Not really. Not that I noticed.
Yeah, it tends not to happen. No swans this year. That was my favourite.
Oh, Bjork. Bjork needs to start coming to award shows again. No, but it was good to see Spike Jonze pick up the best screenplay for Her, because you don't usually get to see Spike Jonze at these... these big awards.
And this is a film that I know lots of our listeners have seen, because it's starting to get some sneaks around New Zealand, and our Australian listeners, a lot of those have seen it already. And it is one of those ones that we're just sort of waiting on tenterhooks to find out, because it's not the most promising idea in the world. Like, you think, how really is this really going to be as moving as people say it is? But who knows? Yeah, we shall wait and see. Anything else about the Golden Globes that you want to mention? Can you two-word review it?
Nice dress. Two-word review. But I do have to venture into miniseries territory because of the New Zealand connection.
Oh, yes.
But yay, Elizabeth Moss getting best performance in a miniseries for Top of the Lake.
And so on that basis alone, you'd have to say that nobody in the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, not one of the 95 have ever heard a real New Zealand accent.
No.
Because if they had, then she wouldn't even have been nominated, probably, because that was the diciest New Zealand accent.
But the great thing is that it was written, she was had been living in Sydney for several years, so it was okay that it was a bit dodgy and a bit Australian at times. They wrote that in, I think they specifically wrote that in for Elizabeth Moss, so they could be like, it's okay, it's not perfect.
Close enough.
But I do adore Elizabeth Moss, so.
Have you seen Wolf of Wall Street yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, come on!
I want to. Sorry, I'm like sick and at home and I don't want to go to the theater and... I'm sorry.
Okay, now there is one film that you have seen, we'll talk about that next.
My name is Lizo Memminger. I don't have a family or even a place to call home. I never understood the meaning of the word hope, but I'm about to meet the people who would change all that.
Come. Meet your new parents.
Your Majesty.
From now on, you call me Mama, yeah? And that lazy pig over there, you call him Papa.
Your first book. Are you sure this is yours?
It wasn't always mine.
Can't you even read yet? Go on! Read one word!
I'm not such a good reader myself, you know. We will have to help each other out.
No, this is the weepy to end all weepies. The
really?
Book Thief. No, probably not. Well, you know,
according to Fred Thompson,
yeah,
and
that's right.
He is the word.
Yeah, he's never let us down.
No.
Yet. So, The Book Thief, what do you make of it?
Well, just for those people who aren't familiar, it is a drama based on the award-winning novel by Australian author Marcus Suzak. Set in Nazi Germany, the story follows young Liesl, newcomer Sophie Nelisse, who was in, she was the lead female student in Monsieur Lazare. That is the ultimate weepy of all time, thank
all
you.
Right. So not so newcomer then?
No, but she knows weepy territory,
yeah, okay.
So that's good. And her relationship with her foster parents, Jeffrey Rush and Emily Watson, and the Jewish man who hides in their home from the BAFTA-winning director of Downton Abbey. Thank you, Flix,
oh,
for that
explains so much.
Yeah. So I haven't read the book. I was hoping to before I saw the film, but it didn't really work out that way. But I'm still looking forward to reading the book. I saw the film. It's about a really heavy subject, you know. She gets separated from her family, and she gets adopted in this new country, and it's the war and
Nazis. It's heavy.
It's Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
It's heavy, and you know, people are getting sent off to war, and there's child soldiers. It's very upsetting, but it takes a much. I found it really light for the very heavy subject material. Like, it's quite easy to watch. I didn't get really weepy in it, but it was enjoyable, and it's I think it's very family friendly, a very family friendly telling of someone's experience during that time. But I did feel it was a bit choppy because it's voiced over by Death, as is the book, as I understand. But it seemed to come and go, and there wasn't really a steady. Like rhythm to it. It's like Death would just sort of like show up. It's like, oh, quick, we need to connect this.
It felt a little bit like they'd chosen the best lines of Death from the book and said, oh, we got to have that one. That's a good one, regardless of whether it actually fitted the moment or not. Yeah, carry on.
Yeah, so I haven't read the book yet, but as far as, you know, matching the readership to the movie, I think maybe it's a good match between the two. We'll have to get some reviews from families who have gone and seen it. I wasn't totally crazy about it because I felt it was missing a lot. But, you know, war, when I go into a movie about, like, the war, you expect it to be a bit more, like, gritty. So.
Yeah. Okay, so I thought this was absolute rubbish. Just, complete rubbish. I hated this from almost minute one to minute 120 or 118 or whatever it was. I had so many problems with this. I don't think I've seen a big film make so many missteps, stylistic, narrative, casting, everything. It's like whenever there was a choice, they made the wrong choice. And I was like, oh, really? And so, first of all, there's this choice to have everybody in the film speaking English in a German accent, except when that is too difficult, and then they would speak German with subtitles. And for quite a lot of the film, the children speak alternate words. You know, nine, I'm not going. What? What? Like, on what kind of logical basis do people do this? So you've got street signs. You've got street signs that are all in German. But the words that she writes in chalk on the basement wall are all in English. There's some books that she looks at, they're palpably written in German, but then they have close-ups of books that she's reading aloud to the Jewish refugee, and they're in English. And it's just like, pick a thing and stick with the thing, please, because this is just, every time it happened, it jolted me out of the story, and it happened almost every time somebody opened their mouth. And I don't know, there's a whole lot of commercial reasons why you do this. And you know, you remember last year there was that Thor Heyerdahl film Contiki, right, where the production company, they shot every shot was done twice, once in Norwegian,
mm-hmm.
and once in English, right? And so there was a Norwegian version of the film and there was an English version of the film, and there were, in the English version of the film, there was no Norwegian spoken, right? But here, there's this, and that was done for commercial reasons. It's because in America, nobody goes to subtitled films, right? You're basically cutting 95% of your box office out. So I understand the rationale behind it. But then somebody decided, well, you know what? They all have to have German accents, because otherwise people won't know they're in Germany. Or we've got some German actors who will speak English in a German accent, and it will look really strange if, like Keanu Reeves, some of them have got American accents or Australian accents
or French Canadian
or Scottish accents or whatever. So, you know, let's just give everybody the clunkiest option of them all, and we'll give them all a German accent, because that makes perfect logical sense. So on that basis, I'm struggling, right? I'm just, it's teeth grindingly awkward, that whole thing. Then it's slow, and it's kind of, there are these light patches, there's kind of humor, but the humor is so labored. It's also, there's a snowball fight in the basement, and it takes so long, and it's just like this, it's half an hour too long, and easily you could have compressed it, condensed it, made it tighter and got to where you were going faster. What else did I hate about this? I actually hated death. Hated death. I thought
so,
it was
so chipper.
I hated death. It was the voice of it. It was done by Roger Allam, who is, I think, would be a familiar face if you'd seen him. But he's like the Michael Gambon that you get when you can't get Michael Gambon, right? And so, that was frustrating to me. I thought, you know, some of those line readings were clunky. Anyway, I was hating all of it, including him. And then, don't start me on the music. Oh my god, the music!
I don't think we have time.
Oh, look, it's my show. I can do what I like. Simon's not here, so the music. You know how You hear songs sometimes and you think, oh, wow, that's a really neat tune. Isn't it amazing how after all this time, after all this music that's been written, people are still coming up with new melodies, new tunes. Isn't it amazing? One day they'll run out, won't they? Well, you listen to the music of The Book Thief, and that is what the running out feels like. It's like, oh, you're just throwing notes at the wall and seeing what sticks. This is, you know, this, and you know, John Williams. John Williams wrote the music, and it's like, was he asleep when he did it? Is he had a stroke? It was awful, awful music, and so sort of somber and portentous, but completely unmelodic. Oh, man. And then, you know, I hopefully we won't get into spoiler. Stop me if I'm going to get into spoiler territory.
I just really want Liam from Flix to like take both of your reviews today and animate them in like GIFs with stick figures of you like being really angry, but like showing what's happening in the movie at the same time.
So, my final problem with this is the ending, which performs the most, it's the most sadistic thing that I've ever seen done to an innocent lead character in any kind of film at all. And to then have all of that happen to her and for us to be told, well, she's saved by literature, isn't she? She's so, you know, all that trauma, the most awful, awful things go happen to her, and then they happen to her again, and then they happen to her again. And yet we're supposed to believe that the power of the written word will somehow turn her into a whole person, and that actually the only thing that really matters is her, the power of her imagination and the beauty of language that she's discovered and all of that sort of stuff.
She probably
and
has a pretty good imagination because she's probably suffering from PTSD.
She also had, I know, that's exactly right, the trauma. But she must have a bloody amazing imagination because at one point she tells the hidden Jewish person that the sun looks like an oyster.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense.
No. She, how the hell does she know what an oyster looks like? They can't get meat for their soup. She's at 12. Oh, the sun looks like a what kind of an oyster? Like a frozen oyster or a...
I don't know.
Anyway, I'm thinking, I don't even know what an oyster looks like. How can you know?
You don't know what an oyster looks like.
I mean, vaguely, but not enough to be able to say that that's what the sun resembles.
It's not what the sun resembles, I can tell you that much.
Jeebus creepers. It was, seriously, I just wanted to shake all of them and... It just drove me mental. So I really hope that this is the worst film that I see this year. I hope that, you know, we've knocked off the two really the real clunkers this week, and that the rest of the year it's onwards and upwards.
Hopefully.
Yeah, two words.
My two-word review for The Book Thief is light reading. As in they just browsed through the book and like picked up things and like put it in the
Just a frustrating shambles. I could probably come up with more, but why bother? They didn't.
Whew. Well, Fred Thompson likes it. So if any listeners out there enjoyed the film, let us know.
Yeah, put me in my place. Tell me where I went wrong.
Or if you've read the book, let us know.
This is a thing. I have a suspicion that people who are responding to it are actually people who've read the book and go, oh, you know, it's like,
and they can make the connections.
It's like a muscle memory or something going on in there. Yeah. You know,
that was like me for Hunger Games. I was like, oh my god, reliving it. Yeah. I'm gonna cry the whole way through Mockingjay.
Interesting piece of news this week actually was that the biggest film domestically in the USA in 2013 was The Hunger Games. Mm. It overtook Iron Man 3, and this is the first time that a film featuring a female lead character has been the number one in the US box office since The Exorcist.
Oh, right. I read that.
Yeah.
And at the New Zealand box office, it's been out for 8 weeks and it's just sitting just outside the top 10 in number 11. So
People still going. Yeah. Well, I think there's some justification for that because, first of all, Jennifer Lawrence is really, really good. It's for a teen sort of franchise movie. It's got some gumption to it and is pretty well made and doesn't make you want to stick needles in your eyes. So, you know, on that basis, it, you know, deserves everything it gets. Mm. That is our show for this week.
Me show.
Oh, boy. I have to look up my script because, unlike you, I haven't learnt off by heart the closing part of the show. Next week, what are we going to talk about next week? Nebraska?
So looking forward to that. That was on my list of films I'm really excited to see this year.
Actually, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, that is.
Nebraska.
Nebraska.
I'm going to look up my flicks.co.nz app.
We might have to go to some like Bollywood or something just to pad out the show.
Well, this is the other thing. Doom with an H is just a massive, huge, huge film in India and internationally. Big, big money. And, you know, we do tend to ignore Bollywood here.
And we maybe talk one about day how we much should we ignore it. We should just do
I know. We should just, if we're going to ignore it, we should just ignore it, right? No, Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit next week. And
woo.
Oh my, Justin Bieber's Believe.
Oh.
You're going to come to that one with me?
Speaking of Justin Belieber, he was busted. They found drugs in his house, so.
No, really?
Yeah, that's how that story ends. I'll tell you that much.
Well, here's the thing. I we've got Justin Bieber and Believe, which is kind of punishment for something, but we will be doing that one next week. Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, and Nebraska.
I think we should go to the Justin Bieber one together.
Yeah, I think so.
Because Never Say Never is actually pretty good.
I think.
But now he's all like gross.
I think you should go sooner while you can't hear anything.
Mm, yeah.
That would be probably the best.
Mm. I wonder if they're going to show it in Titan.
Or they do a sort of closed captions one for the hard of hearing. That would be the way to go, I reckon. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes or your own favorite podcasting software. And if you've got favorite podcasting software, can you tell me? Because I'm really hating the podcast app on my iPhone at the moment. Anyway, the latest episode will always get downloaded automatically that way. Please leave us feedback at the iTunes store or wherever you find us. Those ratings and reviews, they're super useful to help people discover the show. And more people, you know, it's growing in their ones and twos every week. You can contact us.
Yes, you can find us on Twitter via at CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast, on Letterboxd, where you can find our two-word reviews, which we try to update every fortnight or so.
Oh, boy, when I don't have a day job, it's much easier.
And as always, on our website at cinematica.co.nz.
The show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music was 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store. We're going to leave you with some more music. No idea what it is, but it's playing out as we speak. I don't know. It might be from 47 Ronin.
We like to keep it mysterious.
We do.
After your book thief rant, I don't think there's anything John Williams can give us for the ending of the show.
Actually, maybe I should play some. Because it'll be on, maybe that's what it is. It's some of that awful John Williams music, and we'll cut it. We'll fade it out as fast as possible. Don't you worry. Thanks very much to everybody for listening. That is it for this week.
Have a good night.
You too.